We get that going? Perfect. I dedicate this teaching to my mom who passed away last year of pancreatic cancer, Vilma Rosado Torres, but Geraldine Rosado Torres. And I celebrate the opportunity to even be able to speak to this. And I dedicate this to her and to the lineage that came before her. All the peoples, kind of how that all goes back, right? I dedicate this teaching to them and our gathering to them. And also the mentors and teachers who have walked with me, Shekhinah, who has every step of the way held my hand. And I don't have words, and I'm a poet, and so that's unusual, right? Like, I'm like, I'd love to have fancy words for the amount of gratitude I feel, but I don't. I'm just so grateful for all the things that led to this moment, and that continue to evolve and grow and shift. And so I dedicate this time that we're having together to, in Sephardic tradition, there is this, well, it's actually, there's this beautiful book about it. Oh, thank you. Thank you. Yeah, there's this beautiful book about the actual medicine of Sephardic tradition, Sephardic women. And the way the women were referred to back then was buenas mujeres. And so I dedicate this to las buenas mujeres in my lineage and all our lineages and all the ways that medicine shows up. And so there's that. So we know that our benevolent ancestors are absolutely present with us. And all that is going to be in this very spiral type of nonlinear, I don't have an idea of what's coming next type of like vibe. That's the vortex that we're in. And so I have a deep gratitude for that. So saludos, saludos, saludos. Having done that, what I would love to do is call in the allyship and the partnership of all the directions, north, south, east, west, above and below, the assistance, the angels that walk with us on a daily basis and are kindly watching over our communities, all of them. And I want to call them into this space. I call into this space that which you need and you don't even know. I call into the space the kind of that shift from absolute confusion, disbelonging, the things that make you unsure, the guilt, the complexities that show up in our humanity that often are an obstacle to our inhabiting our bodies in this time and space. I call that assistance into here. And my prayer and my desire is that you would get what you need. And even more, may it give and be abundant wherever you are at. May the flow and the beauty and relationship of all the elements, fire, earth, air, and water, may they comfort you and hold you as we move through our conversation. And with that support, knowing that although in a physical way, sometimes we can feel so alone, we are not. We are not. We are held by things beyond our even like our brain's ability to comprehend beyond that which can be named. So all of that is in this space, and I'm so grateful for the honor of being able to talk about this. Right, decolonization as teshuvah for Jews. It's a ripe time for us to have this conversation. And we're like right in the middle, right? Smack dab, Rosh Hashanah, Yom Kippur. We're right in the center of a time in which in our various manifestations of traditions, you get to like pour it all out. Like the Selichot take you to a place where you're like, hey, like, it's like, you know, where am I? What is this world? There's so much pain. And all the places we're in pain and all the ways that we long to come back to ourselves. And so We are holding that in this moment. We're holding also all the ways that our communities are in pain. And we don't need to diminish that in order to inhabit also possibility and also joy, right? Like that's, I feel like that's it. If any in ancient Jewish tradition is the capacity to hold both joy and sorrow, both pain and growth and beauty, all of it, right? And that's the beauty that so much of our traditions have for us. And so we'll be talking some about that. What I'd love to do, though, in this very like put you on a spot type of vibe, I'd love for you to introduce yourself and introduce what you, yes, just please go ahead and, yeah, go ahead and share the link. Share the link. Absolutely. If you know somebody that wanted to attend and couldn't for any reason, and we're like, just send them the link. We are it's too damn much for us not to be able to participate because we are not there financially. It's like, that shit can go out the door. We'll make this work because we need the medicine and we need to have space where we can sit and be with each other. So yeah, please do. Please share the link if you know somebody that wanted to attend and all of that goodness. So what I'd love you to do is introduce yourself and tell me what brought you here. When you saw this very last minute, because that's what happened. It was that I was laying down. It was like 3 a.m. And I was like, oh, hell, we got to talk about this. And then I'm like, there's no better time than right in between Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur. We're going to do this. And so here we are. So I'd love to hear your name, how you identify, whatever feels right for you to share, and then also what brought you here and why you're here. And anybody can go first.
I can start. Okay. I'm sorry, my four-year-old is also here, so.
That is perfect. That's life. That's it right there.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. My name is My name is Mia Foyer. I am currently living in Oakland. I teach sculpture at an art college here. What brought me to this conversation that I'm very grateful to be having is exactly word for word how you put it. Laying in bed, scrolling, there it was. Oh yes, this is the conversation I just felt I so desperately wanted to have and be a part of.
Wonderful. Thank you for sharing.
Hi. So my name is Denise. I'm in the San Francisco Bay Area. And I think the same what Mia said. I was just kind of scrolling through and I saw it in one of a private group chat on Facebook, actually. And so I decided to, right there and then, I was like, okay, let me check this out and see how it is. So
beautiful, beautiful. Thank you. Welcome.
Hello. I'm CK. I'm in Chicago. I think I saw Dory Midnight post this, and I'm so grateful. I felt perfect. I feel like this year I've really deepened into high holiday practices. I think it's a different kind of reflective year for, I think it's a collective experience, but it's definitely my experience as well. And I'm grateful for this offering, and especially today, and just moving forward. I'm grateful. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you for sharing, CK, and welcome.
I could go. I'm Melissa. I identify as she or they. I actually just found out about this through Mia. So Mia's my cousin, and I'm super pumped to be here. This is literally all that I'm like thinking about lately is decolonization and Judaism, because that's a lot of what my master's work is about, because I'm Jewish and Métis, and I live in Canada. I'm in right near Halifax, about 2 hours out of Halifax, and I just feel like we just like today had like maybe a hurricane come. We were going to have a hurricane and it didn't happen. And it just feels like that feeling of both like intense joy and intense grief is kind of like permeating through this whole year. And I just am so thankful that there's something like this being offered. So thank you.
My pleasure. Welcome. And thank you, Melissa.
Hi, everyone. Can everyone hear me all right?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. My name is Callie. My pronouns are she and her. I'm in Los Angeles, Ha'amangna territory. And I, this past year, have been sort of on a like health challenge, healing journey, and been thinking a lot about my Jewish lineage, and found out that my autoimmune condition came from my Jewish lineage. And I know that that's actually pretty common. So I've been thinking a lot about healing my body and how that I can kind of heal backwards and be in community with my ancestors. And with that, it feels really important to look at all the different sides of Judaism as I'm like kind of reconnecting to it and being like, how can Jewish mysticism and these like sacred practices help root me in like the work of decolonization and the abolishment of white supremacy and like the prioritization of the equity of care and nourishment and shelter. And sometimes it feels like the information on Jewish mysticism and practices and rituals can be difficult to find within Judaism. And so I was really grateful. I also found out about this through Dory Midnight, and my best friend from Jewish summer camp. So I'm really grateful to be here in community with you all. So thank you.
Thank you so much. And welcome. Welcome, Callie. Thank you so much. So my name is a little side note. When I was younger, I used to like watch how people would change their names after some sort of like initiation or event. And I used to be like, because my ass was judgmental as shit. And I used to be like, why are they changing their names? Why is that even necessary? Can't you just use your own name? Now, however many years later, it's like some people know me by Angelique. Some people know me by Yaya. Some people know me by Ya. And then there's so many other ways that I move in community. So some folks know me by Angelique and some folks know me by Ya or Yaya, which is just a kind of a pull together of Yocheved, Angelique, Amy, Arroyo, which is just the way that works. And I live in Columbia, Pennsylvania right now on the land of the Susquehanna. And I live 2.5-ish blocks away from the Susquehanna River. Which is such an honor to be here and be so close to a river that's pretty ancient, actually. And so I love that because, again, these bodies of waters remind us, not only do they hold a memory and many memories and many lives, but there's still this capacity to generate energy and generate comfort and generate nourishment for community. And for all of us, like, and when I mean all of us, I mean from the tree family to the plant family, right? And so to be able, and I love when we're able to name the land that we're on, because I feel like it's so important to begin to acknowledge the very complex, layered, multi-layered history of where we're at. So Dory Midnight and I are not only sistren, love alike, you know, that sister from another mister type of thing. In addition to that, we're both Kohenot. We were both ordained as Kohenet last year through the Hebrew Priestess Institute, and there's like a whole group of us that were from that particular class. And to me, part of some of the narrative that I bring into this conversation, I identify as a Puerto Rican Jew, and actually a New Eurekan, because I was born in Brooklyn, and I was primarily raised in Puerto Rican culture. And Jewishness and Judaism seemed like something that was kind of like over there, but like we couldn't be it. And as all beautiful, mysterious things happen, one thing led to another, my deep desire to like be connected to something, and I couldn't like name it, I couldn't figure it out, I didn't understand it, brought me to a path in which I was, one, deeply struggling with identity. And one of the painful aspects of that was that I had grown up, you know, with this Puerto Rican identity, but light skin, which made me more gringa than it made me, to Puerto Rican folks, more gringa than it made me Puerto Rican. And my mom went to live in the island when I was a kid for a couple of years. And that kind of impacted the way my identity was shaped, feeling like I never fit in anywhere. And that there was this thing that called to my spirit and my soul, but somehow, you know, what the mirage was a Ashkenazi view of Judaism, in which like I was like, that's beautiful and not me. I was like, that's new. And so as time went by, I don't have language to explain how it came about, but I knew that somewhere deep in my lineage was this unnameable thing, and that my mother felt she didn't have access to it, but was kind of like a side window watcher, which I don't know about you, but like my grandmother and my mother used to do that window, you know, watching thing where it would like just walk the avenue just to look at the window stuff. And I'm like, why are we doing this? It was torturous as a kid. But it speaks to kind of this relationship of always looking from the outside in. And so needless to say, I started like committing when my kids were pretty young. I have two kids. They are 27 and 23. And every time I do that and I can't remember their ages, I feel so bad. But we'll put that aside. Just don't tell them. and for me, a lot was about giving them connection to something more than just this, like a belief system that was just like in the air, right? Just a belief. But I wanted something to anchor them that they could return to whenever they needed to. And so I often tell people that the way I came about Judaism and my Jewishness, which later on I discovered that, and then my mother, we got into the whole like, oh yeah, we do have Jewish lineage and holy moly and all of those things. But I wasn't waiting for someone else to tell me what I knew in my body and what I knew in my heart, right? And that I had a right as a child of the diaspora, as a generation that so much of my family lineage had to assimilate into the cultures, right? And so much of the narratives of recognizing that when family came from Spain to Puerto Rico, that it's so complicated and such a complex narrative. And I used to like get, you know, sometimes you just get in your bit about stuff. And I used to get in my bit about like them not having the courage to hold on to the belief or hold on to the traditions. But if my kids were at stake, I don't know what I would do. When your children and your family, like assimilation seems like a small cost in comparison to actually live. And so that really sobered me up in my very judgmental attitude around it. I was like, but why? Because the complexity of identity is so intense. And when we don't know, when it feels, and forget about like an external, you don't know where to go or who to be with, internally, when you're struggling for what we would say the right to be is an extremely painful experience. And so for me, part of having this conversation, similar to you, Melissa, like, so my background is I've been doing social justice work for a long time. I used to primarily work with sexual assault survivors. And then from that moved into doing anti-racism and anti-oppression workshops and trainings and things like that in my community. And then doing women's circles and then like meeting with folks in the like youth in the intervention centers. And then I worked in the prison for a little bit with women in the prison. And so my work is very much oriented toward not so much healing as this thing where we are no longer struggling, but really the process of embodying our humanity, which is complex. And because I come from such a complicated past and experiences and trauma myself, I knew that some of these pieces between our identity, our belonging, fundamental human things, when those things do not feel held and noticed and witnessed, they tend to wreak sort of like an unconscious havoc on who you think you are and how you engage the world, right? And often, so what we'll see a lot of is because we don't know how to belong into the thing that's speaking to your soul, you'll go after the things like it's over there. Maybe that'll give me that sense. So for example, I have forever been an energy person, right? Like I believe in energy, I do energy work, all that good stuff. Because I didn't understand or didn't have enough understanding or wisdom around what is available to me in my traditions, you know, I became a Reiki master, a Mune Ki practitioner, right? And some of that can be in alignment with some of my lineage, not too far off, right? And then some of it is actually doesn't come from the lineage that I come from. And so the complexity of that gets really challenging as time moves on, right? Where we're like, oh, we're going to do this Ayurvedic thing or yoga, which I love to pick on yoga. Yoga, it sounds great. We're all going to do all these movements, but we won't even mention that this is an ancient body of wisdom and that the actual poses are like in a line of what's important. That's the last thing that's important. And yoga is a way of being in the world. Right. So and this all comes from trying to go take a teacher yoga training and wanting to offer that as a support system for my clients and my community. And then as I'm sitting there, I'm like, wait a minute, there's something off here. How are white folks getting paid mad money to do this thing? Meanwhile, the case system is in place and operational in India. Meanwhile, right, so like a lot of that tension, I was like, I don't know what to do with it, but I'm not doing this anymore until I figure out where I land. So what happened? This is one of those, what happened was that after exploring all these different ways of what seemed to resonate with me or be tools or relationships that I wanted to be in, I discovered something. I discovered that Pesach, right? Pesach, here we are. We get all fancy. It's a Seder. We do all these things. Some of us do more than others, right? Some people, like, I used to clean out my whole house, do that whole like chametz thing, and nearly like almost have a nervous breakdown over chametz in my house. And then finding them in my pocket or like vacuuming and then forgetting to get rid of the bag in the vacuum. And I was like, I seriously had chametz in my house all this time, all that cleaning, and I forgot to throw out the bag, right? Which is like perfect. What I realize in my practice and in the different ways that I've come to practice Judaism was Judaism is elemental. We wash our hands. We light fire. We speak brachas, right? And we have festivals and rituals that celebrate the earth. you know, Tu B'Shvat. And then it hit me. I was like, hold on a minute. I'm over here. Right now I'm working on my undergrad. I'm aiming for my PhD in psychology. And one of the things I've been doing is studying deeply decolonization within anti-racism work and within spiritual practices. And the thing that came through for me was like, holy shit. First of all, I curse almost like a sailor. Maybe a little less than a sailor, because I don't have the experiences of a sailor, but whatever experiences I have, I feel like cursing can be an art form. Anyway, that was a squirrel. I realized that here I was looking and longing for something that was right underneath my nose. And that in our tradition, so we have, you know, orthodoxy, right? Like an ultra orthodox, and we have a whole bunch of conversations happening with all that stuff. One of the things I realized for myself is that, and the patriarchy within that, right? So we are full of a whole bunch of our own shit that we have to work on. Having said that, I also recognize the way that these particular movements actually preserved something throughout centuries of diaspora. And I want you to think about that for a minute. A people from a land were actually able to preserve traditions related to a desert throughout generations to the point that we have access to them now. If in the work of decolonization and recognizing the processes that many of our communities, not just Jewish community or that particular identity as a Boricua, right? Like that's a very real thing. And Puerto Rico is a very good real-time example of colonization and the impact. And so as I'm looking at all these pieces and I'm like, wait a minute. Sometimes in trying to hold the tension of what we come from or the traditions that we know of, we're unable to see also the gift in it. And when I started realizing that all these books that we have access to, because the books are endless and they're also expensive. Can we just name that? They're just really expensive. You want to get a book to study about, you're going to get a new book and it's expensive as all get out and makes it hard sometimes. But these books, this capacity to be able to distinguish and name all the ways that this practice, this tradition can look is really powerful medicine. So what I'd like to do is I'd like to take maybe like a 5 to 10 minute moment right now. And I want you to journal, get a piece of paper and pen, and I want you to journal, what would a Judaism in which you feel connected to look like? So if it feels better to kind of shut down the screen, please do so. I'm going to put some music in the background and we'll do 10 minutes, so 7:40.
Can you repeat the question one more time?
Yeah. What would a Judaism for you that resonates for you look like? Does it work?
Thank you.
You're welcome. Perfect.
Listen, oh, you should wrestle with. Who shall know?
Perfect. So just a minute more and try to wrap, if you're still in it, just go ahead and wrap up your last thought or anything that you feel. And of course, as with anything else, you're welcome to continue to name that in writing later on or in a time that feels a little bit more spacious if now it doesn't feel as spacious. So often the way my teachings or frameworks is something between, you know, talking and exercises, depending if it feels right to step into something more. Because these conversations are so complex and so multi-layered, I feel like the best that I actually can do is like record them and send them out to folks so you can come back to it and come back to whatever you need to come back to, and trusting that process as well, which is really important. So as you were writing and processing, I would love it, if possible, for you to share something that came out for you. So you know how we're moving through something, but then we see a part or we say something and we're like, wait, what? And it's like, there's probably more to that. Something that was really like resonant for you as you wrote it out. If you're willing to share that, it would be amazing.
I could share. Something that really stuck out to me was I grew up and I went to a Jewish school, and we learned like a lot of like Jewish law and Hebrew and Tanakh, but we didn't really talk about the Kabbalah a lot. Mm-hmm. And that was part of my version of Judaism that I'd like to really focus more on.
Yeah.
And I also wanted it to be very inclusive and intersectional, and that's just not a model of Judaism I've seen. Yeah. And so that kind of surprised me.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you for sharing.
I can share.
Okay.
Go ahead. Go ahead.
Are you sure? You can go. Oh. went at the same time. I would say similar to what Melissa said, I think inclusiveness / belonging. I don't really like the word inclusiveness, but belonging and more intersectionality within Jewish spaces. I think that's probably one that really stuck out to me that I think that I'd like to see more of, hopefully, in the future.
Yeah, thank you.
Should I go?
Yeah.
Okay. So I'm just going to read what I wrote.
Yeah.
A little easier, but Judaism that does not center patriarchal values or patriarchal dominance. A Judaism that is able to harness trauma into wisdom and love for each other and all species. I just want to say I grew up in the same community as Melissa, which is a small, conservative, very traumatized Jewish community in Winnipeg, Canada, where I felt there was, and like Melissa, I went to a Hebrew school from nursery until 10th grade. And so I also wrote a Judaism that is not so traumatized that it operates under fear, scarcity, and anti-Indigenous, racist, and classist ideologies. And then I put Zionism ? In brackets, because that is something I'm really, really struggling with, how to think about Israeli policy. And also a Judaism that allows me to separate myself from or helps me heal from internalized anti-Semitism and internalized sexism and internalized fatphobia. So these are all things that I've just really been thinking about, the bodies of all the women in my family and growing up watching them hate themselves so much, watching them hate their bodies and all of the weirdness around food, and just seems to be so much about part of like who I am. And as I've stepped out of diet culture and as I've, you know, found more acceptance in my body, I simultaneously healed this like dimension of fat phobia that lived in me, but somehow I also was healing the dimension of anti-Semitism that lives inside of me, internalized anti-Semitism. And I don't know how it's all connected, but I just feel like it is. And so that's, yeah. Thank you.
Thank you for sharing.
I just wanted I wrote some similar things to Mia, and was really appreciative of all the things that you were naming. I think what I wrote is like this like phrase that kind of popped up as I was writing was just like a safe haven for all tender bodies. So I think a lot about in the realm of bodies that are in pain, bodies that are hard on themselves, in judgment of themselves. And I know that I found in my family, like with my mother and my bubby and my big bubby through dreams, like this deep like warmth and celebratory love, and just this like richness and community. And I like so badly in the Judaism that I think I would connect with, like that would be the foundation. And then the goal would be to like expand that sense of celebration and warmth and care to like everyone we come across, not just Jewish people. And then I also wrote about Zionism and feeling really challenged by the fact that like, as growing up, even in a Reform Jewish community, it felt like Judaism and Zionism was a binary. And I don't think I feel comfortable with that in the Judaism that I connect with, in terms of what's happening right now and has been happening. And so I think I also want to echo just this, you know, coming from a place of love and abundance and strength and compassion to like break down these harmful systems that promote nationalism and, you know, come, like I can acknowledge that they come from this deep place of fear and trauma, and wanting to like hold that and like send love to like my ancestors who had that trauma, but in the same breath say, okay, let's expand. Like, how can we breathe into this with love and with prioritizing everybody's bodies, and rituals. And so that was a big part of it. And then one more thing that popped up was the elements, because you had mentioned, Angelique, that, you know, I'm actually studying traditional Chinese medicine right now, studying to become an acupuncturist. And that's been part of my big draw to like root myself in my lineage, as I'm having the honor of learning this traditional medicine, not of my lineage. Mm-hmm. And I think it's so beautiful, the work with the elements. And I've had that thought of like, I wish this, like, where is this in my lineage? Like it must be somewhere. So it was really special. Like when you said that, I was just like lit up. I was like, I want to know more about that. So
yeah. Thank you so much.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I echo a lot of what everyone said. I had written down embodiment as well, and I think Judaism for me would be a space where I feel comfortable and embraced and seen, and all my identities as a queer femme, physically disabled survivor, and wanting to find the threads of all those things that do already exist in mystical Judaism and just wanting to, yeah, I also grew up like in a very like reform Zionist Judaism, and a Judaism for me would be anti-Zionist and would still center those things that always appealed to me, like even as a really young person, like the singing and the beautiful harmonies and the food, you know, cooking is going to be central to my practice, and plant magic, and just something that feels really spiritual embodied, and also like queer Jewish community that really but that really pushes past this, like, I feel like we say community a lot, but like, do we really hold each other? Do we really feel held? And in this moment where like, all I want right now is to feel held, and I feel like I'm actually finding ways to feel held in other ways, and wanting to find more of that, wanting to connect with the divine feminine on like in a real way all the time. And I also wrote down ancestors ?
Yeah. Thank you. Beautiful. So one of the things that I want to say, the Judaism that you're hoping for exists because you exist. You exist, I exist, and we're definitely a whole generation of folks who are willing to step into the space to do it differently, right? And this is where it comes, where what would be the ideal, the utopia, is that those things would be so easily found, because we often feel so like torn, like where's the model of it? Where does it exist? You know, where can we inhabit that? Or where do we sit and lay back in it, right? And in my experience, because you exist, this thing you're speaking of exists. And the more you integrate that into your being and are in really dynamic relationship with this thing that is you, that is us, this thing that is new, that is old, right? We're creating the space for it wherever we stand. And that's going to be really important as we move forward in our kind of like shape-shifting and spiral linear time as people, right? It's this recognition that the thing that we are looking for is the thing that we actually are. And when we step out enough to say, okay, like this is the intersection that I live in, these are the multiplicity of identities that I hold, here are the constructs in the society and in the community, right? So like one of the challenging conversations that I love having really challenging conversations anyway. One of the challenging conversations is the way white supremacy has created this very blank over, right? And it's happened to a lot of communities. Anybody that presents as white, right, in that way, in skin color, is lumped in. And when we're having these conversations around white supremacy and where do we fall in that, and then our own desire to be deeply grounded in identity, we don't have to diminish any of those things. We can name white supremacy and the way that it's injured severely many communities, right? My strongest belief, hands down, is that the world that we are creating, that is being birthed, that is coming online, if you will, it is the medicine, the beauty, and the magic that all our cultures and traditions will bring to the table that will make this world a different place. So being able to allow yourself to anchor into what you know to be true in your lineage, right? The thing is, we don't easily find the containers of that so that we can go sit and be in relationship or fellowship with, right? And that's the part of us that mourns. Really, there's a lot of grief in that because we want more than anything to have that community for ourselves. And there's a tension in that as you walk out and live out this earth-based, right, Jewish traditions, like all the ways that it moves, you continue to kind of do that whole attract thing, like, oh, wait, I know you. And I know you because I see myself in you and you see yourself in me. And that the liberation that we're all talking about is actually happening. And it's happening because you are the embodiment of it. And so sometimes this journey feels incredibly lonely because we're searching all over the place. But what I want to kind of restore, and the model that I'm using actually for this conversation, is Pokalenu's Stages of Decolonization. Pokalenu studied Hawaii. There is, and I forget his name every time, so I'm not going to even try. I'm not one of those people that remember names anyway. But someone had done a study on Hawaii and how the impact of colonization and what it would possibly look like to decolonize as, right, as an island and as a people. And the stages of decolonization function as follows. Wow, my dog, I put him in the bathroom for a little because if he gets excited and starts barking, that's a little hard on the microphone and on the session. He is literally in the bathroom right now crying. He's like doing soft howling. He knows that it's getting at me. I'm like, wait, what is that howling sound? It's my dog. He's a little Chihuahua rat terrier and he's feeling the fact that I have asked him to stay in the bathroom. And then later on, when I let him out, he'll start barking and take, you know, just like setting me straight. Anyway, that was a squirrel. I'm like, I'm listening. One of the things that I want us to be able to do with this decolonial model, and I'm very careful at the distinction between indigenous to Turtle Island and indigenous to other lands. We are indigenous to other lands. And our indigeneity, because of white supremacy, because of the generations of assimilation, we've landed here in this really complex construct of identity that is about domination and control, right? And trying to figure our way in that narrative and all the ways it moves. So the ultimate intention is to create a paralysis and a solid fear base, right? And so when we're looking at decolonization, and bear with me, walk with me through this, right? So we have the what's happened here in America and the ways that white supremacy has blotted out like anybody's individual identity, Irish, Italian, Jewish, you go on and so forth, right? And then we have the indigenous people of this land, and then we also have the conversation around Black bodies and Black community and people of color. Like, so when we do that thing, BIPOCs, right? The language is always gonna be challenging and we're always gonna need to shift and be in learning with it. And then there's that conversation. So we have all these layers, which often get confusing for folks, because once once white supremacy does what it does, it asks people to become invisible, but yet subscribe to the mass construct to keep it going. And what happens with that is that it really fucks with everybody's identity. But if you have people in a state of confusion and they don't remember who they are the least of all a threat. And so while we hold this language around the construct of white supremacy and all the challenges, there is a teshuva that needs to happen for us in all our different ways. Nothing is ever going to change that I'm a Puerto Rican Jew. Nothing will ever change that. And that in my body, in my DNA, there's, you know, signature of Africa, signature of the Middle East, like signature of Spain, signature of Puerto Rico, right? And signature of indigenous to South America and the islands identity. Holding that complexity, I don't need to choose any in order to inhabit the fullness of who I am. And when we can kind of move out of that space where, and it's just because I got tired. Y'all, I just got so tired of contending with definition that I never fit into. And I don't know about you, but there comes a place when you get tired that you had enough and you're like, you know what? I'm not even asking. I am the intersection. I am the embodiment. I am in my generation. A very important thing. In my generation, I am what Judaism looks like. And I don't need permission for that. Right? And so what I want you to see is that the thing that you're longing to see externally, you inhabit that in such an abundant way that if you just settle into that space, and here are the stages of decolonization. Ready? Rediscovery and recovery. Then there's mourning. Then there's dreaming. Then there's commitment. And then there's action. And the reason why I thought this was so powerful for us is because to recover or rediscover the beauty of our roots is going to be one of the most powerful things that we would ever experience, because we don't spend so much time, you know, kind of like fussing over whether we have the right to it or not. But we're like, this inhabits my being. I am the expression of it. And then you get to go on and do the work and be, actually be and inhabit who you are. Our ancestors, bless them all. Bless them all. Our ancestors, the communities that are still holding on to an ancient way or an old way of being because of traumatic experience, would offer up an opportunity for an extraordinary amount of compassion. And also anger. And also, right, like a deconstructing of the principles that anchored it in that way, but also compassion, mostly. And in some ways, we can no longer expect the past to have the capacity that the future is inhabiting. We are their future. They were for their existence and their time. And if anything that Judaism does really well is remind us about generations, right? And that's what I want to do. I want to dismantle the Judaism that is stuck in those constructs and paradigms of patriarchy and oppression. And I want us to have access to the way it anchors us into this dimension and this time and season. I want us to have the permission to mourn what it has been to have been colonized and also in some ways become a colonizer. My family came from Puerto Rico to the United States with the idea of a better life, AKA settler colonialism, capitalism, ableism. They thought, right, that if they came here, they would have an opportunity for jobs, for a better life. But the cost has been great because assimilation is a very grievous thing. There's so much that you lose of yourself. And so to be able to acknowledge that the people that came before us came from a complex context that we can't actually speak into because we weren't there. right? But that doesn't inhibit that for your generation, you get to rise up and be that very thing that you're longing for. So part of the work in this decolonization as teshuvah is really about not just the return, right? Because teshuvah is about turning. Not just a return, but this return is to a place that you don't know cognitively, but is all written in your psyche and DNA. And so I want us to be able to look at the pieces of Judaism that resonate so much. And I want us to peel kind of, when I was a kid, I used to do this weird thing where I would put glue in my hands and do that so that I could peel it off. I don't know what got into me as a kid. That's such a weird thing to be doing. Anyway, right? But it's time to peel off the layers that is the energy that gets in the way of you being in right relationship with your multiplicitous identities and lineage. This is going to be really, yeah. Go ahead.
Can I ask a question?
Yeah.
For me, I have been so hungry and I've been wanting so desperately to know about who my ancestors are. A couple generations back, a bunch of Jews came over from Eastern Europe, settled in the middle of Canada, and then never spoke of it again. And I feel like for the most part, I don't know where my ancestors even came from. My cousin Melissa traced one back to a village in Russia, but the others, like, I don't know. Austria, Poland, like we don't know. And no one wants to talk about it. And because I've been in this, like, I actually did a couple sessions with Taya Shear.
Yeah.
Jewish ancestral healing. And I tried to connect that way. And it was unbelievable to just explore a connection between women on my father's mother's lineage. But I feel like because I don't have any, I don't know who anybody is or where anybody came from, I've just been lost. I've been like, because I've never really truly felt deeply connected to Canada. I mean, that's not where my ancestors are buried. That's not where, I don't know. Like, it's just been, I've felt really kind of lost.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then on top of that, traumatized by learning only about the Holocaust for about, you know, the first 16 years of my life.
Right.
And it, to the point where I thought that my security was dependent on white men wanting to rape me in a camp. Like, I mean, it really, you know, and I haven't really been able to say that out loud until recently, because I've dissociated myself completely for decades, and now I'm finally starting to ask these really like deep questions. But sorry that I just went off like that and interrupted you, but I just, yeah, like, everything you're saying just resonates so much with me, so thank you.
Oh my goddess, you're welcome. Absolutely. Yeah, CK, you wrote, how do you spell that name? Which name, love?
The name of the person whose five stages it was?
Yes, Poka, P-O-K-A, and Leinui, well, I always butcher that part, but it's L-A-E-U-N-I. I actually have it, so I'm one of those people that I need big-ass paper. Along with like processing something in a bigger way.
Yes.
And so what I did was I created
a
much more concise movement. And the reason why this isn't a cyclical pattern is because it's not linear. Decolonization is not linear, right? So we may have the moments of rediscovery and recovery. Then we're stepping into mourning and dreaming. Mourning is a really important aspect of our integrating all these experiences, of being able to mourn what has been lost. being able to mourn the things that were made or created to make sense, but yet don't fit and are not nourishing or generative. And after we like are going through that cycle, we come to commitment and action, right? So this is similar to the language of like intention, right? But we have to allow ourselves to process through this. And this was the moment that for me was like an aha. And the aha was, hold on a minute. That's me talking to myself. I'm like, wait, hold on a minute. Mm-hmm. Are you telling me that all this time, here I am, I'm like lighting Shabbat candles. And I'm like, oh, this is what we do to separate time. Shabbat is this beautiful, honorable thing. Light the fire, boom, boom, say the bracha, keep it pushing. But when I started to realize, I was like, I'm looking for decolonization methodology somewhere else. And here is a tradition within my lineage that has been holding on to their indigenous identity for more or longer than our fingers together can even count. That is some phenomenal shit. Right? Like, When I put in its place like the patriarchal shit, all the other stuff, and I look at the bones of Judaism, it's all earth-based practice. I'm never gonna become Shomer Shabbat. That's not gonna happen. I wouldn't be able to handle that. I tried when I was younger, and I failed at it awfully. Right, because I'm like, rip the tissue paper. I'm just gonna take a crap and clean my butt with the toilet paper, and I'm not gonna count them before the Shabbat comes in. I'm not gonna do that whole thing. I can't even handle it, right? Because there's a part of learning to respect our position in a lineage of generations. And that when we're looking at these pieces and we're seeing ourselves in it, like, okay, do I have a right to this? Do I have a right to name that lighting Shabbat candles is actually an extremely mystical practice? It's all under our noses, right? Like right there. Washing your hands, right? This practice. And if you don't just like, you don't go like this in the water, you slow it down each hand, right? And then like, you don't even dry them quick. You set the intention to say the blessing over washing your hands. I love the movies that depict the time way back when a culture or a community discovered that washing your hands was a way to shift the passage of disease or contagion. Here we are down the line. We're struggling with all these other parts of Judaism, almost like the veil and the mask that won't let you come in. And while that veil may exist and that masking may exist, all I know is that it is an incredibly mystical thing to set a Seder that remembers an event that happened before any of us were here. So when I'm looking at like, oh, okay, how do we decolonize? How do we reclaim? How do we do that thing? I realized that Judaism, Jewishness, it can be an identity and or a spiritual practice, right? Or a religion. Both of those angles exist together, because some folks don't observe any tradition per se, right? And they identify as Jewish. It's all par for the course. Like, it's all part of this very complicated human thing. Having said that, when I realized that each part of my rediscovering and then coming into tune with the way I wanted to enter Shabbat, enter rest as a practice, I get to define what works for me, was the minute that Judaism changed for me. Because its intention and its spirit spoke louder to my heart and my body than all the bullshit. Right? That's something that our elders need to tend to. And while they're learning to tend to that, we must live. We must rediscover or recover all these pathways and practices that remind us of a time way before, that connect us in lineage and allow us to be the fullest expression. And I love what you said, Mia, because I did, Taya and I just did an interview for the Ancestral Jewish Ancestral Wisdom Conference that's coming in October. And that was one of the things we're talking about. That shit's going to be the shit. Anyway, one of the things we were talking about is what happens when you can't track back like that. When you can't look directly back, and those that have it, there's a degree of privilege in that. That their identity and their family were able to keep those lines, right? Written down somewhere or stored somewhere and all of that good stuff. And I'm happy for them. That's not my story. I'm actually a first generation New Yorican, right? Like New Yorican, Jew Yorican, like all that mix. I'm the first one in my family to go, wait a minute, there's something strange happening here. And then I started discovering a little bit about my ancestral lineage, but not enough to be able to create the same sort of stuff that people who do have all that information. But what that demanded of me was trust. That if I'm the most luminous expression of my ancestors, then what I need will come forth. Right? And so we see that like with kids. You know, some people go, wow, you're just like your mother. Right? Like if they know the mother, they look at the child, they're like, oh, you're just like your mother. Because the child carries traits that are very physically noticeable, right? Like that's a thing. In the same way, the compulsion you feel to, the compulsion you feel for some reason to get a bronze bowl. You're like, oh my God, there's something about that bowl that's really great. It just does something. I want to put this on my altar space. Well, lo and behold, in our tradition, back in the days of the tabernacle, you know, that whole thing, right? A bronze bowl was used in that space and has moved through generation after generation. And here we are. You have no idea how your ancestors kept Shabbat or anything else, but you do these little things that just make sense to you. And you tend to put them aside because you think that they don't look like what's common. And then on top of that, then you go, I don't have a right to remake a thing that's so much longer, but you are a generation that was meant to embody a Judaism that works for everybody. So here you are, unconsciously, your ass doesn't even know why, but your great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-grandfather used to make these bowls. Here you are down the line, you have no idea. And I think it's really important to trust that. I want us to trust that. It's not going to be this the way we imagined it, but it surely is going to be way fucking better. Because you'll actually feel connected to it. And this is the part where in our conditioning, societal conditioning in this era, we are uncomfortable with mystery. We want to articulate and name everything. Because if we do that, it qualifies it. It's not where we're going. It's not where we are at. Where we are at is this relationship that you must develop with yourself to trust the things that are coming through you. And that it, as you live in that particular practice, somebody else is going to go, oh, hey, I saw this like image on Instagram, blah, 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 blah. How beautiful. Can I DM you? And then you're like, okay, right? And then you read the DM and it's somebody who's resonating with the way you're embodying all these identities and all this movement in this world. and they feel resonant with it and want to like be close in close proximity to your work. The question then demands of us is that enough? Are you enough? Are you enough proof of all the amazing ways that Judaism can look? And if we can't track our ancestral lineage, can we trust that we are our ancestors' most powerful, luminous dream in reality? And that when we create an altar space and we separate space, AKA altar space, AKA Shabbat, AKA High Holy Days, 3 days of separation, right? Like the language is different. So we feel like we're missing something. You're not missing something. It's all inside. And will you trust it? And I know that what I'm doing is I'm blending the esoteric with the letter back where it belongs. It's a dynamic relationship. We say that the words of the letter, the Hebrew letters, the words of the Torah are dimensional. They have many sides. And that's a very like Kabbalistic concept, and at the same time, a very real and true concept. So when we're able to kind of honor the known and the unknown in our ancestral lineage and create a space for that complexity somewhere in your home, wherever it makes sense for you, create the space to hold that so that you're able to move on to your work and your embodiment. When something begins to create a freeze response in you, a paralysis that others you, or that causes you to second guess everything you think, that needs a container outside of yourself. Because we'll get stuck there, right? We'll get stuck mourning and grieving all the things that we didn't have access to in our time and in our generation. But that's why the process of decolonization is so beautiful to me. Because it takes time for a very key ingredient toward shifting, and that's mourning. It is okay, if we use that very basic language, it is okay that we have this experience that we cannot name the people behind us. It's sad. But that is also part of what we carry in this world. So we make space for it. While I may not be able to put a picture of my great, 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 you know, that whole thing, right? Great grandmother, whoever, there is an item that will represent that for me. For example, I have a shell that came from Spain. I can't track my family back. I know that my great grandfather came to Puerto Rico early 1900s from Spain. That's all I have. That's what assimilation has done. Colonization has done. It's an erasure, right? And so the best that I can do is, because this shell comes from Spain and it blesses me to have something that is part of my like makeup, I get to put that down as a symbol of what's been lost, but also not so lost because it's in me. And so when we're looking at all these right now, where, I mean, our communities, our world is, there's so many things happening in big ways, and we don't know what the future holds. Whatever it does, in that very linear language, what I hope and desire for you most is that you can be in, and I don't want to use the word or the language of ownership, because that is a colonial mentality. I want you to have deep relationship with your beingness in Judaism, in the practices. If I could even go in the indigenous practices, because that's what they are. Planting a tree on Tu B'Shvat, you know, Sukkot. For the love of all that's holy, Sukkot. We actually build structures on the outside to remind us of the time that our peoples were wandering on the, like, what in the Flintstones? It's right there. Right there, underneath our noses. You want to see community accountability in all its complexities? Yom Kippur. It just bear with, I want you to notice it, because what it does when we don't notice this is that we feel so far from it, but it's right there. As a community, a whole ass community, on Yom Kippur, folks be showing up and be beating the chest over individual and collective missing the aim. Al-Chet is the longest like thing that happens on Yom Kippur. You know, everybody's like, you know, we. It hasn't entirely been lost to us. Community accountability, right? And so I want you to see the root. I want you to see the place where it dives in deep, and that you are part. I love that he just did that. That is so cute. He's like, uh-huh, because that's what you do with moms. You just, when you're that small, that's what happens. Right? So I want us to step into that. I want you to decolonize your Judaism. Yours. You are the access point for the Judaism that you hope to see in the world. But if we get stuck on all these external structures, get stuck, there's a thing to witness, there's a thing to name, there's a thing to talk about, but that is not the end all of it. There's a rootedness that cannot be robbed from. You can't miss. I mean, when I look at halakha, it cracks me up, right? Because I'm like, yo, these mofos were thinking about shit deeply for a long time. Some of them a little sure of themselves than others, but for a long time, trying to figure out how to keep this thing alive that has kept us alive. So I want to invite you to, what are the boundaries? To me, halakha is about boundaries, and I don't operate by following any of the halakha, right? It just, that's too much for me, too much for my nervous system. But there are boundaries that I've set as a living Torah. As a person who practices earth-based Judaism, our people know how to honor the earth equally. We have so many, how many blessings aren't there? There's so many blessings. I don't even try. I'm just like, thank you. Thank you. Yep. Thank you for the apple. Yep. Thank you. Thank you for the cereal, right? Haaretz, like, you know, Kiddush, like all these things, all these blends of things. I want you to be able for yourself to create boundaries that feel good to you. And I want to speak courage into your spirit that we don't have to look so much outside. It's okay. And although sometimes I feel like as a society, we're addicted to like trying to, you know, look at the outside and figure it out. On the outside, we're like, oh, well, if somebody else tells me, then I have the right. If fill in the blank, then that authorizes me to actually engage in it. And I want us to move away from that. That won't work, not in these times. I just did a keynote yesterday for a conference on conscious resilience. And the process that I walked folks through was cultivating a dynamic, adaptable praxis. I'm not even using the word healing anymore, because what I understand about us is that we are an ecology, and in our ecology, our processes are about being responsive. For some of us who have a lot of trauma, it's response after the reaction, which cannot be controlled, right? And that's a whole like trauma conversation. And so what I do want to say is that as you're looking at, it's going to be a radical Judaism, but it's also going to be dynamic and dynamic because you're inhabiting that. Yeah, go ahead. Oh, okay. She had to go. Ah, yes. Okay. Awesome. So, right, I want you to be able to step into that. I want you to be able to step into the core root of a Jewishness that is decolonial in its praxis. It's already all there. And those words are really simple, but really. So when you decide to do, Yom Kippur is coming up next, right? And so this week we're in this like the 7 days of awe, 9 days of awe. I always forget the numbers, right? This window of awe, this window of teshuvah, this window of return, of turning. I want you to turn to the root. And I want you to see yourself as the expression of that Judaism and of your rightful place in a long lineage. And while I can't change the way the Reform Synagogue looks here in Lancaster, Pennsylvania, which is where there's a Orthodox and there's a conservative. And they're primarily like white folks, middle class, that whole situation. And I decided a long time ago, I did go to the Reform Synagogue for a little bit. And then I was like, okay, I'm checking out of whiteness. I need a rest. I do this as work. I don't want to do it anymore. Like, I want to be able to be in a place and be in community that feels generative. And so what that looks like for me now is that I actually join the High Holy Day services that the Kohenet community provides, right? Because in that space, there's so much multiplicity. And so we can just be, and not so much have to like worry whether we fit or whether we know all the Hebrew prayers or whether this, that, and the other. Do not forget that your people are an indigenous people. And that some of the gravest loss and the saddest mourning is the fact that in the assimilation process, so much was given up in order to belong. In order not to die or be murdered. And so while we understand that and we offer compassion and generosity, you get to be and do in a different way. You get to rediscover or recover. You get to trust what is inherently in you. That's where your kavanah comes from. That's where devotion comes from. That's where intention comes from. It comes from just being you and connected. And so the process of decolonizing as teshuvah, I want you to see our practices as a pathway of decolonization. If you do happen to light Shabbat candles, I want you to know that that shit is a radical act. So many of our communities couldn't do that for fear that their door would be broken down and the neighbor would tell on them. And this is as much for Ashkenazi as Sephardi Jews and Mizrahi Jews. Like, we all have these like really painful narratives and trying to get by. But we are at a time where that must shift. And it's kind of like that once and for all, for a long time you've been struggling, but now you must be in direct dynamic relationship with all the pieces of yourself, because the pieces of all your intersections are dynamically powerful as medicine for community, as medicine for yourself. And that's the thing that I want us to grab a hold of. There's something to be said for the white supremacist construct, dismantling, you know, deconstructing, showing up actively to name that this construct exists. And this construct tends to like blur everything out. And so we can acknowledge, you know, and it looks different for everybody, wherever your GPS in that particular naming, right? Like if you're passing as a white person, because that's what the construct demands, then we can acknowledge that the construct is real and there's real implication to privilege. And we also get to be in deep relationship with our lineage. And the more you embrace and engage that, you're able to source, if you will, your energy and your strength from your practices. From your Shabbat practices, from your High Holy Day practices, if you do the mikvah, from your mikvah practices, all of it is this opportunity to be in dynamic relationship. And all of it is an act of decolonial radicalness. And this looks different for us than it will look for our Indigenous brothers and sisters of Turtle Island, right? That's a different narrative and needs as much attention. And I want to say co-conspirators and comrades, right? And that needs to be present, but you also need to be anchored and solidly and deeply grounded in your medicine. And so I often tell folks, healers predict, particularly, I tell them that, and when I do anti-racism workshops, I try to remind people the importance of the medicine of their lineage, because it's all of our medicines together that will bring in the world that we long for. It's not going to be one medicine. It's not going to be like an alchemy of like 2 to 3 medicines. It's all the medicines of all the nations, right? Like, we need it all in order to really move into a space that will live into a potential yet not yet even imagined, an equity not yet even imagined. It will not take just one way. And that's the biggest lesson, right? And so the thing I try to name for people is that difference is not division. I am a Jew Eurekan. And the way I practice both what can be considered as magic or my priestessing, it all comes from a lineage. And that medicine is as important as Mohawk family medicine, is as important as African Yoruba medicine, right? All these medicines are imperative. And if you ever notice, they all have these dimensions of elemental manifestation. Everybody's honoring their ancestors. So do we. So this thing that seemed like this far out thing, this over there thing, you are the thing. And when you're in relationship with that, that changes how we move. The thing I can promise you is the more fully yourself you become, and the more you turn like unfurl from the colonization, from the assimilation, from all those pieces, the more aligned and anchored you feel, the more that message is sent out into these ethers, which we're using one right now. We're in a portal right now, right? A Zoom call. Everybody's in their own spaces. And here we are. We're actually in a portal. Literally. You know, like I'm like, oh, the age of technology just manifested what is actually happening all the time in all the worlds and in all the dimensions. And here we are. And being in direct, deep relationship cultivates the type of beacon that does this. I shared last minute, here you are. And you didn't even know who the hell I was. Yeah, this sounds good. I don't know who, but if they know this other person that I know, then maybe they're going to be okay. And then you're like praying all the prayers. They're like, please let it be okay. Right? And so I want you to trust that. I want you to trust that as you embody yourself fully, your people will continue to come your way. And to be open to what that can be imagined into, which is the dreaming aspect after you've mourned what you feel that you've lost or that's been missing for you. And you create the space for that. And then you get to step in into another vortex and another spiral where you get to tend to the medicine. Oh my gosh, Ruby, yes. Right, medicine all around. So I invite you that if you haven't particularly allowed yourself to look into the history, you know, whether your identity is predominantly Ashkenazi, Sephardi, Mizrahi, however you're alchemized in that, start reading some of the history with the eye open toward magic, with the eye open toward the mysticism, to the Kabbalah, right? It's like there is so much beauty and magic in these rituals, and then you make them your own. And you share with who you feel led to share with or not, but they're yours. And so what my one of my many commitments in this conversation is the idea that I don't want us to miss this part, to miss the part that Judaism in its ancient origin root is powerful medicine. It's an earth-based medicine. And fascinatingly enough, has lasted through many diaspora. That's got to, that blows my mind that my people went from the Middle East, journey, landed, like married, no other people, had little people type of mix go on, like, right, like that thing happened. Like, oh, they landed in Spain. That's wonderful. And they managed to assimilate sufficiently. And guess what? They married somebody from a particular town that wasn't particularly Jewish, because that would be a beneficial thing to just like keep it, you know, so that the persecution doesn't hit us. Well, then you discover that it does anyway. And then our asses are moving to somewhere else and then marrying somewhere else and then having little children. And so here, my identity spans all the way back from the Middle East to like Spain, Portugal, Africa, right? Lands in Puerto Rico. And then there's another layer of indigeneity filling my being and filling my vibration. And then here I am. And I can honor the Taino expression of cosmology as much as I can honor my Jewish cosmology, because it lives in me. And I'm no longer waiting for anybody to give me permission to inhabit it. And if I can help support us getting outside of the cycles that keep us looping in that, which often leaves you feeling lonely as shit, unworthy, right? Without us like being able to nourish that sense of belonging, often can offer up confusion like nobody's business. And then the thing that's been speaking to your soul so deeply, you can't even reach. There's a different time. We are in a different time. And I want you to be able to ground in that for yourself first and foremost. And then as you see fit, create the space in the world for it. So your expression of Judaism that addresses able body bullshit and that starts talking about all the ways where, and like, you get to inhabit that. You get to be in that. You get to say something about how this is shifting and what's working for us and doesn't work for us. And then somebody else across the pond is going to be like, I saw your teaching on, you know, the Instagram thing. And you're like, yeah, because I've actually been stepping into like, what does it look like to dismantle like ableism? What it looks like to dismantle, you know, body phobia and body distortion, what it means to love my cankles, right? Like what it means to really have a high respect that I come from a tradition that is oral. We did books later. Our tradition values oral storytelling. I don't have to go far anymore. And I'm not saying anything about, you know, choosing to bring in other methodologies into our world and into our pouch, right? I think medicine pouch, right? Into our basket. That's neither here nor there. What I don't want is for you to miss out on what's available inside of you already. Right? And so like, if you've ever read any of Anita Diamant's books, like Rashi's Daughters. Those books are hysterical as all get out. And they're hysterical because they're very, very like old school. Like there's some edges of orthodoxy in that and kind of that vibe. But you'll discover how much of our rituals are actually magic in Anita's storytelling. She does such a great job of extracting out of the Talmud the fact that we knew about witchcraft before people named it witchcraft. And that there was things we were doing all over the places where we landed that were in the basement, AKA Kabbalah, right? And one of my teachers, Jill Hammer, just put out a book about the Sefer Yetzirah, and I highly recommend you get the book and enjoy every last bit of her work around the Kabbalah and around Jewish mysticism. And she's actually one of the leaders of Kohenet. And so again, all these, that's okay. Sefer Yetzirah, and it has like a subtitle, which it would be the difference. But I can, let me see if I can share it in here. I'm going, wait, let me think for a minute. No, don't apologize. Every time we apologize, I just want to remind you all that that's a form of oppression. I'm trying to look it up so that I can put it in the box. And I know that we're almost at time, or we're over time, we're almost at time. That's why I put ish after the 8:30, because I was like, this is not gonna happen. Hold on. This always happens to me. I'm not the greatest at like the multitasking situation. But I want to get this so that you can get it. And of course, it's on Amazon, and the suggestion is that you can buy it from Ben Yehuda Press. If I can get this to go up. And so this is another way, and this is what you're talking about in terms of like your interest in mysticism. The beauty of that is really getting in contact with the folks of our time that are actually naming, right, and doing teachings around it that are much more accessible. Holy moly, it's so hard to find the information right now. But I don't want to leave you without it, because I'm so excited to read this. She's an amazing teacher, and I feel so honored to have been in relationship with her. Holy Mother of the Goddess, I'll tell you, right now I'm scrolling down her thing trying to find this book. Okay, I'm gonna put the unfortunate Amazon link in here. I know everybody has different thoughts about it, but it'll give you the image so that you can find it. Right, we turn place. It's just, she's excellent at that. And so I highly recommend that you check in and get that book for yourself as you explore. But I also want to open up the possibility that already in rituals that we do, there's a lot of medicine there, right? And that communities like Kohenet community and Nishmat Shum, which Dori's a part of, right? These are folks creating spaces, queer spaces, differently abled spaces, just such a beautiful intersection of beingness, right? So I want a moment. Are there any questions, any thoughts? This is just the beginning. This is part one, which is setting the stage. The second conversation will happen in October 13th with Joe Kent's Cat, who is a Kohenot that was ordained last year with me, and she created this beautiful work called Transcending Jewish Trauma. Okay, I was like, Joe, we got to do this. And she was like, let's do it. So that next conversation, I'll be sharing it in social media. And that will be part two, where we get to talk about the trauma and the ways it impacts us and the narratives we've internalized. And so this is like one step after another. And then in October, you do have the Jewish Ancestral Healing Conference, which is free, which is exciting. And there's many of us on there kind of talking about what it means to be Jews of color, and also, you know, connect to our ancestry and name the things that are invisible and visible. So this will keep the learning and the movement growing. So now that we're nice, deliciously over time, do you have any questions, thoughts, or comments before we close?
I just wanted to, as you were like, first of all, thank you. I have such deep gratitude for this offering. And I was just wanted to share an experience I had that sort of, I feel like, is like an example of how like that embodied knowledge can like come through, and that like healing knowledge, or that like care, that non-linear care with our ancestors. My autoimmune condition really affects my joints, my sacral joints. And I was having like this really severe autoimmune flare, like really debilitating, wasn't able to walk. And I just was like, okay, I'm just gonna try. Like I've been reading about like opening up communication. I was in the shower just like sobbing. And I was just like, okay, I'm gonna just talk to my loved ones who like share this gene with me, like, and just offer them, you know, like faith and understanding that this gene is in our lineage for a really specific reason, and we can like hold space for it. And I did that, and then I went to sleep, and I had this dream of my, who I am pretty sure was my big bubby, so my bubby's bubby on my matrilineal side. And she said in like a strong Yiddish voice, she was like, come here. And she said, turn around. And she put her hands on my sacrum and did some type of, I don't know, something. And there was like this big shot of light, and I woke up and my flare was gone. Like I was able to walk. And it was like just this beautiful thing of like, they're in us, they're with us, like, you know, acknowledging our differently abled bodies and having love for them. And so that was just like, I just wanted to share that.
Yeah, beautiful. Yeah, absolutely. Thank you. Anybody else? Any questions, thoughts, or comments?
I just want to say thank you so much. I really appreciate being here, and just want to say thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome. It's my pleasure. In the space, I want to make, Melissa, are you good?
Yes, I just want to say thank you so much. And this is so affirming, because this is all of what I'm doing in school, talking about how to embrace my whole identity, and how, you know, we are not a half of anything or a quarter of this. Right. We are just whole people. And to see even the humanity in this conversation and how much authenticity is here is so beautiful. And like, it's not something I see in an online space. It's harder to have that kind of connection. And so I want to thank everyone for sharing. And I wasn't able, I came last minute, and I would like to contribute and come to the future presentations, because I think just more of these conversations need to happen, and just that kind of reimagining of what our future can be like, and what community can look like. So thank you for that.
Oh, of course. It's my pleasure. Thank you all so much for being present and willing to sit in space and have the beginning of a very long, and I'm positively sure, generative and nourishing conversation. Things are nourishing even when we have to face the hardest moments. This is how we get to move together. This is how we get to be. And also, like, show up uniquely as the most beautiful alchemization of all the peoples we come from. And it is my honor to create this space. And so if we can just take a moment and kind of let breath move in through your body. Maybe you're doing a little stretching, a little moving, just like letting it sit in your body now. Like, yes, right, I'm as I am is enough. As I am is beautiful. As I show up, I'm pouring into the world just what is. And I look forward to hearing more about the practices that come up for you and the things that you're like, you know, I put my Shabbat candles in these weird little candle holders. And it's something about that felt amazing and familiar. And I would love the opportunity to go, word. Word. It's in there. It's there. So thank you so much for the honor and the pleasure of being in space with you. Once this week, I should have this recording out by the end of the week. And so y'all can just listen to it as many times as you need. I will be now moving out section two with full name is Joanne though. I'll be laying that out. If for any reason or another you find yourself that there's some challenges financially or et cetera, just let me know and I'll just send you the link. It doesn't need to be complicated or inaccessible. That's some bullshit. Reciprocity is beautiful. It's a gift, and it can't be the sole reason we have access to information that can nourish us. So please know that and keep that in your mind. And if you think there's somebody that you know that may want to attend the second one as well, is like, sure, wonderful. Let me know and we can send them the link. So it's been an honor to meet you here in this world and all the worlds, all the dimensions and all the elements. And I bless the long ancestral lineage that you come from that created way for you to be here now. And we need you as fully you as possible. So thank you so much. And I'll see you in the next one.
Thank you so much.
Welcome. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
Have a wonderful evening.
Yes.
Bye.